Hello and welcome to ICTJ's special podcast series on truth commissions and peace processes. This morning, we're joined by Alan Doss. Alan is a senior political advisor to Mr. Kofi Annan and an associate fellow at the Geneva Center for Security Policy. He has had a long career at the UN working on peacekeeping, development, and humanitarian assignments in Africa, Asia, and Europe, as well as at the United Nations headquarters in New York. Mr. Doss, thank you so much for speaking with us today.
Good morning. Thank you.
You've done considerable work with the UN in the DRC, and this is one of the most complex and difficult conflicts in the region. The DRC established a truth commission in 2003 as a result of a final peace deal, but 10 years later, the country continues to be rife with conflict, where civilians are targeted and have suffered tremendous harm. Do you think this truth commission has had any impact on society as a whole towards its stated goals of reconciliation?
Well, the commission was established long before I got to the Democratic Republic of the Congo, and it delivered its report also before I arrived there. So it's hard to judge really what impact it may have had. All I can say, however, is that the conflict has continued, taken new shape, but equally violent, brutal. Women and children have suffered in particular. I think there's a general consensus, therefore, that the commission really didn't have a long-term lasting impact. And I think that's for a number of reasons. But the violence has continued and people continue to suffer. So I think the early hopes of the commission have not really been realized. And I think we have to be honest enough to recognize that.
And also in the DRC, only days ago, the infamous rebel group M23 has admitted defeat. And now the DRC faces yet another opportunity to pursue peace and justice in the wake of devastating violence. Are there lessons in your experience from the DRC's prior efforts to secure peace that could be applied in this phase, this new opportunity?
Well, it is an opportunity to create some time and space that I hope will be used to begin to deal with the deep problems, the structural problems that have led to this renewed conflict over 12, 15 years now, off and on. It's important that the rebellion ended. Those who led it have terrible records, been involved in atrocities and awful human rights violations. So it really is an important step forward that the rebellion mutiny has been brought to an end. But, and it's a big but, that is just the start. There are other groups, armed groups. There are the armed forces themselves that have been implicated in many, many violations of human rights and abuses. So I think if this now is to be a real turning point, as opposed to once again a brief interlude before conflict reignites, it would be important to deal with these underlying problems, deal with the problem of communal relations in North Kivu, which is a mosaic of ethnic groups who have been involved in violence against each other, deal with the problem of the absence of discipline in the armed forces and the security forces, which is very important because they're part of the problem. They need to be part of the solution. Deal with the regional dimension, Rwanda, Uganda, and above all, deal with the institutional weaknesses of the Congolese state. If not, these problems will come back to haunt the country in one form or another.
And do you think in this new opportunity there is a desire or an opportunity for truth-telling or truth-seeking through the form of a truth commission or any other kind of process?
Well, I'm not sure what the process should be. I mean, truth commission approach was tried. There's an effort to establish a human rights commission. The United Nations, through the Office of the High Commissioner for Human Rights, for example, sponsored a very important mapping exercise of past violations, a very extensive report that was published when I was still in the Congo. I think we have to continue with the truth-seeking process. I think it is very important, particularly for those communities that have been devastated by the violence. What form that will take, I really can't say. But I think it is important to find ways to bring those communities back together again. And truth-seeking has to be a part of that. Because, as has been said so often, if you ignore the past, it's going to come back to haunt you. As I say, I don't have a particular prescription for how that, whether it's a Truth and Reconciliation Commission or whether it's some other form, but I think it's very important that communities themselves lead this process, particularly at the local level. Sometimes we get involved in Truth and Reconciliation Commissions, important though they are, I'm not trying to say otherwise, but it tends to be very much top-down. So I think we need a balance. We obviously need national leadership to make this possible. We need provincial leadership also to make it happen. But above all, you need communities directly involved, telling their stories and dealing with this community by community, and in particular between communities, because much of the violence has been ignited by fighting and conflict between different ethnic groups and communities. So I think going forward, truth seeking is important, truth telling is important, but how that's to be done, I think this is something that has to be looked at very carefully, and above all, involve profoundly those communities that have been most affected by the violence.
Now, you were also in Liberia at a time when that country was recovering from its second civil war. In 2003, a peace agreement was signed by the government of Liberia and the main rebel groups in Accra. And this agreement called for the establishment of a Truth and Reconciliation Commission, as well as an independent National Commission on Human Rights. Now, there have been many outspoken critics of the TRC, including Nobel laureate Lema Bowie. She particularly has criticized this process for being quite outside-driven, top-down, as you say, as well. And your experience in Liberia, looking back at how the TRC was actually developed, is there anything that you think mediators or the United Nations could have done differently to strengthen this Truth Commission in its very, very early days?
Well, of course, it's always easy to look back with hindsight as to what might and should have been done. It's true the Commission struggled to get off the ground, to find cohesion, to find a sense of direction. There were difficulties, management problems, and so forth. It was also a very complex situation. The war had gone on in one form or another also for a decade with many people involved. Right from the outset, it was going to be a very difficult, even traumatic process. If we were to do it all again, one would have to look carefully at who is selected, who is on the commission, who leads the commission, the terms of reference for that commission. What exactly were we expecting to get out of the commission? I think one of the problems, and we've been discussing this here for the last couple of days in Greentree, is how these commissions get set up. One of the reasons for the symposium we're involved in is that truth commissions have become part of almost the standard post-conflict package. Well, does it work? And in some places, it's very clear it hasn't worked, at least not in terms of the initial expectations and ambitions. And I think that was true also of the Liberia case. It struggled to get off the ground. It finally did get working. It was slow. It was difficult. There were all kinds of organizational problems, some of them due in part, yes, to the international dimension of the commission, I mean, raising funds and all the rest of it. But nevertheless, I think it did make a big effort to try to do truth-seeking and put some of the key elements, facts, if you will, on paper and document them and let people above all have their say, if you will. I think one of the other elements that we have to be very careful, and I think the Liberia case and several others have raised expectations of what will come out of this. And then when people don't see that, frankly, they're going to get some material compensation for what they've gone through, disillusionment can set in very rapidly. And that was a problem we encountered there as well. So I think a whole mixture of reasons to think carefully when one sets up one of these commissions. I don't think one size fits all. I think we all agree on that. But there are some common threads of experience that should inform, not dictate or prescribe, but should inform these efforts when we try to establish commissions in the future.
As I mentioned, you're currently a senior political advisor to Mr. Kofi Annan, whose foundation is the co-sponsor of this symposium here at Greentree with ICTJ. Could you tell us why the foundation and Kofi Annan are interested in fostering this deeper understanding of how, on the one hand, truth commissions and the other peace negotiations and their relationship work? And what kinds of specific norms or practices do you hope will emerge as a result of these dialogues?
Well, the Kofi Annan Foundation has as one of its principal objectives conflict prevention and resolution and mediation. And Mr. Annan himself, as you know, both as the Secretary General of the UN and subsequently has been deeply involved in many of these crises around the world, working to mediate and, wherever possible, of course, prevent. And one of the things we've noticed or noted is that truth-seeking is a part, if you will, of the effort to help rebuild societies, part of the peace-building architecture, if you want to call it that. But at the same time, he has been involved in a number of these exercises, and most recently in Kenya, where we have clearly seen major difficulties and problems, where the Truth and Reconciliation Commissions have clearly not met the initial expectations and ambitions. And perhaps those ambitions were unrealistic, and I think that's one of the things we need to always look at. I myself, when I was with the Department of Peacekeeping Operations in various countries, I was also personally involved in setting up some of these TRCs and trying to get them to help them move along. And again, looking back over these cases, we clearly saw that it was time, if you will, for a reflection. And that as the number of these commissions has grown quite dramatically, we thought it would be a good time to sit down with a partner, and we found that partner with the International Center for Transitional Justice, which has huge experience in this area as well, to organize a reflection. Well, what has been the experience? What's worked? And, of course, what hasn't worked? And then try to exchange views amongst practitioners, academics, policymakers, people who've been on the ground doing this kind of thing from across the world, from Africa, from Asia, Europe, South America, Latin America. We have quite a good cross-section of people here for this event. So I think that was the main, to learn from that experience and then hopefully to channel some of that into the policy mainstream so that people who are setting up a new generation, if that is to be the case, and there are some new commissions in the offing, could benefit from this accumulated experience while still recognizing that every case is different, that one size doesn't fit all, but nevertheless try to use that core experience to inform future practice.
Well, Alan Das, I want to thank you so much for taking the time to talk with us today.
Thank you.